Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to Under Pressure. Another draw, more points dropped. We're without Dan, we're without the in-depth press and analysis as well. Gags is also away, sunning it somewhere probably. But we do have the two experts on with us, the two sports scientists. Phil, you're not too well, but you apparently the last hour you've been good. So how are you, sir?
Oh, not bad, sir. Not bad, yeah. Obviously, disappointing result, but you know, lots to talk about today, I think, which would be good.
You'll pass the test on your slimming world tomorrow, won't you?
Yeah, definitely.
And Si, how are you, mate?
I'm good. I just ate some brownies, so I'm not going to pass the slimming world test.
Oh, too well, because you run about 12 miles every morning.
I'm at 15.6k today.
Yeah, of course. You're allowed as many brownies as you want. Anyway, on to the important stuff. We'll come at you first, Si, because everyone's losing the shit about the injuries, and possibly understandably so, because we've had a few and a few more. So coming into this game, what's the basic summary of our injury status at the moment?
It's a bit of a shit show. I don't know how to qualify where we're at currently and why it's happening, because it makes very little sense to me at all. So I'm currently, until we get more information, I'm going with we're having a very unlucky period. The more conversations I have today, the more I'm starting to believe that we've got a bunch of lads who aren't actually quite injured, but are getting flagged they're not fit enough to start. From the new system that we're using to monitor and cover, like give insight into injuries. Given the two lads that couldn't start that came on and were terrific when they did come on,
Gomez and
Hendo. There is no muscle in the world that says you can't play. You can only play 30 minutes flat out. But you can't play 95 because that's too much of a risk when there's no injury.
So it's 10 men as well. So you're running more.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's all a bit weird. So whenever you've heard me in the past talk about minutes in relation to coming back from injury, that's about acute chronic workload. That's not your muscle might tear if you do 60 and it won't if you do 55. Because that's just not, it's impossible to predict that. And I don't actually see the correlation. But we're, as everyone's probably heard by now, we're working with a new injury prediction AI. It started in the middle of last season. And I wonder if the algorithm is running slightly hot or within Liverpool's dashboard. So they have all of the different information. Like they have a proprietary software that collates and awards a ranking to of importance to all the information that comes in. So like a player's sleep, how their nutrition is currently looking, what their current blood looks like, how much training they have, how much stress they have, how much pain they have, how much training they've been doing, all of these factors in, right? And then they'll have a specific score for the day or a running score, running total. It's that chronic load stuff on top of all of the external stressors. And the AI has supposedly some insight. And I wonder if that's currently a little bit higher than it should. And then so players are getting flagged when they're not actually injured. Just as a downstream consequence of this. And over the course of the next few weeks, it will probably get auto-regulated. So that as an input factor goes down. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Also, you say there'll be a little tweak.
There'll be a little tweak, and the lads that supposedly are being flagged as big injury risks when we're playing one game a week, they perhaps aren't such big injury risks, and it probably shouldn't be flagged. Did you see the interview with Klopp after the game?
Yeah.
I tend to not watch them, but I watched it back earlier. It was like a 20-minute interview. And he was like, it looked like, I've never seen him speak this way before. It looked like he was a little bit making fun of the medical team. In that, right. I was told that I wasn't allowed to use them because they might be injured, but like how many minutes? And they were like, I'm not sure, but not 90, maybe 30. And he was like, so... okay, we can put them on now then, can we? Okay, then go. And then they played great. Is basically what he said.
That's interesting, isn't it?
And he's never sort of undermined the medical staff before.
That's his mate in charge now as well, isn't it? The guy who brought in.
Well, yeah.
Do you think
he's
so?
He's the head of medicine now.
Do you know you said he got brought in midway through last season? Do you think that's also might be a bit of an issue if you're basing your baseline off a mid-season point and we're starting to do it at the beginning of the season? If that makes sense.
I think saying that, so there was a lot of credence awarded to, a lot of credit afforded to the software company and also to this genius rehab coach that came in, who now went straight to the top of the tree as head of medical, which is kind of weird. But anyway, that's not me making a judgment. It's just odd that it happened from an outsider's perspective that jumps over people in place. But anyway. There was a lot of credit given to them, even by stuff I'd said, because we had such a great injury record last season and we managed to get, it looked like a real collaborative effort with the whole club, with everybody making proactive decisions. And so they were given credit and maybe that credit was misplaced. It's possible, or maybe there is other stuff at play. That's all.
Yeah, interesting.
You posted a stat about games missed in the first opening couple of games of the season earlier on Twitter. So do you want to give us a bit of context for how bad it's been?
Yeah, so I can even go back further than the ones that I posted on Twitter. So in basically going back to Klopp's first full season, which is a little bit harsh. Because he had half a season before that and basically set fire to everybody's hamstrings in January. And so the beginning of the next season, we started with the first three game weeks, which had actually had four games by that stage. And one of them was, the European Super Cup, I think, we had had 14 games missed. So when I say a game missed, that means a player. So if there are two games and there are 10 players injured that between them miss those two games, that's 20 games missed. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It didn't make sense to a couple of people on Twitter underneath your thing. I didn't notice that.
that's how it works.
To clarify that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, every team in the league has 38 games missed over the course of the season.
Yeah.
So anyway, that the 16-17 we had 14, 17-18 in the first four games we had first three weeks we had 11 games missed, And then we have 6 in 1819, 7 in 1920, and 12 in 2021. 4 last season, which is phenomenal. It was phenomenal. It was the beginning of the great season of planning, recovery, all that proactive stuff. But maybe there was a little bit of luck. There's definitely a little bit of luck. There's always a little bit of luck with injuries.
For sure.
But this season, we're at 26.
So double the previous worst.
Ostensibly, that's the previous 4 seasons combined.
But that's with the new system, though, isn't it?
That's with the new system.
Yeah.
So you don't know how many lads have missed games from, and that's the 2 of this previous seasons had COVID in. So we don't have any of this season. So yeah, you wonder how many are actually injured.
Gomez looked fine. I know it's outside looking in, but he looked fine to me coming on. I don't know about you, but
yeah,
Rolls Royce playing. He really did.
So we've got 7 soft tissue injuries that have occurred since preseason or during preseason. So we got the Ramsey kid who was already injured. Ginger Kev was injured before preseason on international break, whatever. So we got lads that are coming in that are already injured. But then we've got 7 soft tissue injuries that happened during this. Plus, theoretically, Henderson and Gomez. Bobby just suddenly popped up. So we currently have 10 injuries going on. 3 of which Cade, Ginger Kev and Ramsey started the season. And then Ox got done in preseason really early, didn't he? And that was the major injury. And then with the others, we picked up one by one. So we've had 13 players injured so far this season. I was 13 different players have missed games.
I was still in pre-season, technically, do you think, in terms of the training that they're doing?
No, I don't. If I was programming, no.
Okay.
Not at all. I don't actually think it's a particularly harsh pre-season. I think this is a fairly standard pre-season. But I've never been around a preseason in which we had to travel halfway around the world to play 2 token games 2,000 miles away from each other either. So I wonder how much that has to play. There seems to be conversation around the short turnaround between the end of the season and the beginning of the new season. So the new preseason. So that was 3.5 weeks to 4.5 weeks, depending on which lads went to internationals and that kind of stuff. That's fairly standard these days.
Mane
once had 4 days off.
Yeah.
Mo had a week off in 3 years.
Sorry, how many are hamstring injuries? Just as another, just a side note. Is it 3, 4?
We're currently at 4 hamstring injuries.
But Costas was back yesterday. Was that hamstring as well? Yeah.
Yeah, that was hamstring too.
So that's the only one I was thinking about. You got, say 4 out of this. For me, ignoring Hendo and Gomez, you've got 8, yeah? And you've got 4 out of those who've got hamstring injuries.
So you've got a serious one in Jota, who you could potentially relate to
the training
load. From last season, because he beat his career max last season. So you can see why potentially that is an overuse thing. That's a fatigue thing. Ox didn't.
No, but then maybe he was underused, so he was underconditioned, and they went massively hard on him in preseason training. I don't know. I'm just supposing.
That is very possible. Then there's Thiago, who does his.
That's a match, isn't it?
This is the 6th hamstring injury of his career. He's not a quick guy. Quick guys are usually he is actually quite quick. That's not true. 5 meters, he's quick, but he's not one of those fast twitch guys, which are the ones that usually tend to do their hammies.
It'd be interesting if it was reoccurring on the same leg, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
that would be
could you try again?
Yes, Siri. Yeah. I think this is his 3rd hamstring injury with us, and it's he's had 2 on one leg, 1 on the other, but this is a different muscle than the previous one on the left leg.
Okay, I suppose that's something. I don't know whether it's anything good, but it's something.
Yeah, not recurring, but it's a bit shit either way.
Yeah. Cheers. And Naby was just ill, was he?
Naby was just ill, yeah. Literally puking ill.
And didn't even get 8 minutes yesterday, did we?
No. So maybe, like, I don't think people, this is me rambling on now for 10 minutes about.
No, it's interesting.
It's crucial as well. People.
Crucial, mate.
I think it's really, it's tough for people to comprehend the necessary hydration levels of an elite footballer.
Yep.
I think if you can put yourself in the position now where I say you need to drink 3.5 liters of water a day, and then it's this hot, and you have to sleep at night in this, and then maintain the same level of hydration. So we're talking 5 liters of water a day now.
Yeah.
And then go and puke yourself up for 3 days. I think it might take you a week to get back to homeostasis.
Yeah, and they're measuring that, aren't they, every morning, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
What homeostasis, sir?
Oh, well, just where your body's working normally.
Yeah.
Optimally is probably better than normal. It's where Liverpool players, they get everything measured. Their blood, saliva, all this lipid stuff. So.
And then the surveys as well, where they ask the players questions, don't they?
Yeah.
Anyway, absolutely fascinating stuff, as always, and you're not going to get any better insight into injuries than that. Phil, we'll come to you for the lineups and the perceived pre-match tactics. What did you make of ours and theirs?
I mean, theirs, I thought in some ways refreshing. They just basically said, yes, we are going to play 5 at the back, rather than try and pretend they weren't going to. So they just lined up with 5 at the back, with 4 in front, and Zaha up as a lone with the young lad joining when he could on the break, and Enzi. So that's how they were going to do. They were going to sit in. They were going to do the almost... We had a conversation last season about Palace coming to us and wanting to play Vieira's style. And I think, Rosie, you were like, well, you've got to adapt, otherwise you'll get beat in the big games. And I was like, yeah, but you've got to stick to your principles. And this is interesting that Vieira went with yourself and went, actually, no, we need to avoid getting beat. And the best way I'm going to do that is I'm going to go and line up in this manner, a bit Hodgson-like. They were sort of very 10 metres boxed apart, trying to close down the lanes around them and try and hit on the counter, as Vieira said post-match, with any opportunities they had. And Zaha, cleverly is not a word I would use, but he would, because it's fairly obvious who he went and stood by. He went and stood next to Phillips and tried to outrun him when he had a chance. So for us, the new evolution of the system, which I'm sure we'll come on to, because I know we've discussed it in the chat a few bit, of effectively 4-3-3, but with the right doing something different this year, an actual nine with Nunes down the middle, Diaz and Moe in the usual, and I think the key roles, as we've discussed and I've discussed beginning last season, was the roles in midfield. And I thought Milner had the left side 8, so presumably normally that would mean he'd have the sort of connector, but as we know through watching the game, he didn't really play that role. And Harvey had the high wide, the right 8 role, which was the link into play and make progressive running and in and outs with Moe and Trent. And then because as we've discussed, Gomez was flagged in the system, Phillips came in for his first start in what, a year and a bit, I think, since the San Siro. So, yeah, I think I didn't see anything majorly different with our tactics. I don't think our long ball rate was any different to Fulham, might have even been lower. I think it was 11%, was Fulham was 12%. But Palace certainly came in to sit, soak it up and hit it on the counter, which is exactly what they did. So I don't know what you guys thought.
Yes, I wanted to ask you, because you posted a message at half-time in the Under Pressure group, the WhatsApp group, about you wasn't quite convinced about Trent coming inside as often as he was doing. Is there any comment?
Yeah, because I think me and Sol were chatting about the same sort of thing. There's this thing with, because Pep does it. So Pep brings his fullbacks more so this season as well, brings them into midfield, and then he pushes on his 8s. So they go up and they join the 3 up front. So you have 5, if you like, really pushed on a back 4 or back 3, and the fullbacks supplying the ball. So the fullbacks for City are not getting high and wide as much. They're almost becoming deep line playmakers and connectors. And it seemingly Trent was doing that on the right. I'm not convinced Robbo was doing it on the left. I didn't think anybody was doing it on the left hand side, to be fair. So to get Trent more on the ball in like a deep playmaking role, but what you do then is Mo is then very wide or pinned wide more, and Harvey is then tasks with making the overlapping or getting wide and allowing Mo to come inside. So it's an evolution. It looks like an evolution in our system. I'm not entirely sure it helps us, but it's only two games in, so we'll have to do. But it does seem a bit of a fashion at the moment that top sides are bringing the fullbacks into midfield and then pushing on the eights. The problem I think with is that our eights are not the same as City's eights. You know, they've got KDB and Silva, and if he's still there, they are very technically exceptional eights. We've got Harvey, great. I don't think you'd put Milner in the same category as KDB and Silva, you know.
No, you wouldn't.
And that's not this. I'm not knocking him. You know, you've got to pick the right tools for the right job. And I'm not entirely sure what we should be asking someone like Milner and Hendo as well. Hendo's got a skill set. We all know that. I don't think it is in those half spaces on the turn making that. I don't think that's Hendo's best position. So it'd be interesting to see how things progress as the season goes on. But I do think, and I hate a bit of deja vu, but the midfield seems a little bit unbalanced for me, like it was at the start of last season when we dropped points.
So you've always been a big advocate of you want more to be a bit wider at times. You don't like him in the middle. Doesn't this allow that? Wasn't he very much wide and on the touchline at times in that first half, particularly?
It does. It allows movements that I like, and I like the players involved to have to be involved in those movements. And I'm absolutely fine with the flexibility in possession of how the right side trio work. I would prefer it's not Trent's default to come in and rotate inside, so he's the one that gets put through on goal, as you saw to little consequence late on in the game,
yeah.
A little effect late on in the game. He, I would prefer if like there was a buttress as you get towards the box where he goes on the outside and down the side to the hot zone rather than through the middle. And I'd much prefer that to be Mo if we're in solid possession and we can get somebody into the box of those three. But on the we're talking about positions here, and I don't think ever it's about positions. I think it's about timing of shapes of the team and how they interact with each other. And I think we talk about the position of Pep's. I see this a lot in coaches, and we go through phases. And I'll refer old people back to Italia 90, where suddenly I was 15. When Italia 90 happened. And for those people that have no idea what I'm talking about, when Gazza got famous, Bobby Robson, who was incredibly maligned at the time, despite now going on to be a legend, he was about to be sacked the whole time. England were absolutely shite. And he went to three at the back for the first time in England, because it was very famous across Europe, in Italy and Germany. And then he went to three at the back and decided to bring Mark Wright in as a sweeper. And he played Paul Parker at right-sided centre-back for the first time. It was weird, and he was a man marker. And anyway, so this three at the back thing, it was new. And from them playing in June at the World Cup, every coach in the country of all ages were now playing three at the back, and all kids wanted to be a sweeper. And it was a very weird thing. And it's even quicker to occur. Now. Evans. Pardon?
Didn't Evans go that way as well?
A little bit later, but that was, that was the next evolution of that. But like I say, that was like 7 years later that Evans went the three at the back. It became a bit more league wide at that point. Lots of different teams had different tactics, and they were all terrible at them in the Premier League. When the Premier League started for 10 years, tactically it was a shit show. And they just kept throwing different formations at dumb players who weren't fit enough to do them and had no tactical understanding of learning where and how to play those roles until Wenger took over. But anyway, that's an aside. My point being, people are copying Pep now. Pep's talked about the inverted fullbacks. It's very obvious what he's doing. The pundits are talking about it. So like coaching courses, all the way down to seven-year-olds at grassroots, they're coaching their teams to high press, because that's the most important thing in the world. Every team thinks they high press and play out from the back. So you've got to play the ball to a kid that has no control inside his own box from the goalie. It's the weirdest thing. But then also now they have to play with inverted fullbacks. No one knows what it means. They just position themselves there. So in this regard, yeah, people are talking about what happens in possession. Point is that the thing that we were doing this in possession, but the problem is when in negative transition, which is one of the fundamentals to Pep using his fullbacks there, is to shut the door from a negative transition perspective. So people don't break on City. Yeah. Because they have a box at the back. One goes out to press the pass. One's cutting a passing lane, and you got two lads covering whoever's trying to break. And if we quickly jump to the goal we conceded, that's just not what happened, because it's not natural to our lads. Neither fullback had sit in. Trent was in that channel, but he pushed further and further forward. The left-sided eight, who Thiago would usually be sat just close to 20 feet in front of Virgil, ready for the ball to drop out so he can redistribute. He can shut the door and redistribute. We had Milner sprinting at the goalie. So there was nobody in the middle. The ball dropped over the top of Trent, and Fab sprinting out to try to lop Easy down. Easy's brilliant. He just went past him. It wasn't because Fab was terrible. It's just that he's brilliant at beating anybody one-on-one. And if you look up, there's a freeze frame at that moment where I'm not exactly, without exaggeration, there was 40 yards right across the middle of the pitch, the whole width of the penalty box, where there's not a Liverpool player and there are four Crystal Palace players ready to break.
Yeah.
In the middle. Totally, because tactically we hadn't closed the door, and that's fundamental to these tucking in midfield fullbacks. And Robbo had gone a bit too wide, basically. So Trent had gone too far forward, Robbo had gone too wide, and it's part of the evolution. There are errors, there are mistakes, because it's not autonomous yet. It's not subconscious that we know where we have to be all the time. And so
I'm not sure Milner should have gone that high, right?
Well, the thing is, it's not a position. If somebody is going there, somebody else has to adapt to be, to be elsewhere. So to cover his role, and it means that Robbo can't go and overlap. No. He has to tuck in the thing that he's supposedly working on right now.
Yeah. Which he didn't do.
He absolutely didn't do. He was probably 25, 30 yards too wide.
Yeah. And even if you... And say Trent and Fab were making the box, right? Fab should have maybe pulled out left and Trent should have dropped deep on the right. Then you would have got a box in front of BB and Phillips.
Yeah, but Trent got committed too far forward.
Yeah, so Fab had to
come over and kill the guy.
Yeah, exactly. But you're right, it's the timing and they're not quite in sync with each other in doing this new thing.
Yeah.
That we apparently want
to do. Same time, that they should have been totally, it's not even that they should have been aware of. We didn't even talk about specifically about the lineups, right? But the lineup had a big, it's not even a red flag. They had, if I was Patrick Vieira and I saw Liverpool's lineup, I'm mean about him. Fair enough, but I am. And I don't care because I fundamentally believe it's true, even though it's a little bit mean. I would have put a poster up on the goddamn changing room wall.
Isn't that funny?
Everybody knows it. If he is good enough to play in the Premier League, somebody would have offered more than £8 million.
Would have offered money, yeah.
Good job. 2 years, nobody has.
Inside. You can't be blaspheming like this.
But he is such a weakness in the thing we're doing, right? Yeah. By the time when we had, everyone's going to go on with the 11 game run, of which we had to go through five shit games to get there. Yeah, right? We had to completely adapt the way we play to counteract having those two centre-backs. Klopp's smart enough tactically to be aware of that. This is one game. He wasn't changing how we play. We're building into this new way of playing, which is very high up the pitch. So there was no dropping in halfway to cover for the lad that can't run. So we were doing the thing that I referenced during the game, how my wife said it, that she was worried about Virgil's arm and him getting a repetitive strain injury in his right shoulder. Because if you watch the game, just watch Virgil.
He's constantly telling me.
He's constantly waving his arm to make Nat move forward, whether we had the ball or whether we didn't, right? because they were totally allowing him possession and marking up everybody else. It means they could man mark and leave one guy free who's not going to do anything.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think...
But it just means Zaha just goes and marks him out of possession. Yeah. He goes and marks him because he can just run off the back of him all day long. And Nabbit knows this and constantly kept dropping off.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not his fault.
That's not.
It's not his fault. They only got through once, but it was inevitable. It's the thing they were playing for. It gave them a second. Here is your tunnel to the goal.
Yeah.
It was. It's like landing lights at an airport.
Yeah, it made their game plan absolutely crystal clear, didn't it? It was like, right, they don't even have to worry about which centre-half Zaha is going to stand on. It just made it really obvious, right, put it on there. When you win the ball, you put it in that channel. Their game plan was so simple because we made it simple because we had to and play Phillips.
Yeah. And Phillips, Nat and Virgil had the same number of touches. Nat Phillips came off at 62.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I counted up three times Phillips brings it into Palace's half and there's 10-yard circle around him. No one's near him because they're waiting for him to get the ball away. And he does. Gives it straight away. Gives it away. And you just think, that's... Yeah, it's not his fault. He's been put in that situation. But for the first however long he was on the pitch, he killed us.
Right, let's move on from the tactics. I'm sure we'll come back to him occasionally. Let's come on to the match summary. I'm going to break it down a little bit because it was a strange old timeline, but we had 11 shots to their zero before this god with two big chances. Not sure on Moore's, we'll definitely come on to that, but we ended up with 24 shots to 7, 2.2 non-penalty XG to 1.4, 16 shots in the box to 5. Perhaps crucially, four shots on target to 3. But I think the most important stat here is we conceded 4 big chances and we only had 3. Their shot quality over their 7 shots was 0.2. So they had a 1 in 5 chance of scoring all theirs and we had a 1 in 10 chance of scoring ours. That tells you something. Although we did have 45 shots, touches in the box to their 12, it's what it demonstrates to me is their... And I know two of their big chances came when we were down to 10 men, but their tactics are absolutely all over their shot profile here. To have 1.4 non-penalty XG against us is excellent. To have 4 big chances at Anfield is really bad for us. We conceded the first goal again for the sixth game in a row, if we go back to last season. It's just, it screams draw to me. Although we had like 3 times more shots than them and 4 times more shots in the box, still screams to me that their quality chances were equal to ours and a draw was probably a fair result. And the models had a bit of difference in them. StatsBomb only had us at 1.7, whereas 538 had us at 2.6. 538 just seemed really off the scale in terms of how high they are for attacking numbers. And StatsBomb have tweaked their XG model, as you would have found out if you'd listened to the pod. So have Opta, and Dan Kennett will come back with some info that he was talking about last week about how Opta are doing it. But what I find strange about Opta is, and we'll come on to the chance quality of each big chance, is that they're the ones assigning 7 big chances in this game. But if you look at the shot values from their XG model, they're all over the place. They've hardly got any above the 35% threshold that you talk about, Si, that InfoGoal uses. So I'm not sure whether they're using an XG model and ignoring their people who do the data collection during the game. But one frustrating thing is that we conceded from the 58th minute, and this is B saying this, from the 58th minute in the Fulham game to the 37th minute tonight, 73 minutes of playing time, we conceded 2 shots. So we completely controlled the game for 2 games for 73 minutes, but the 2 shots that we conceded were both goals. Now, I don't know if that's because we're taking risks like you were talking about tactically, and obviously we're taking a risk selection wise with Phillips, but that kind of cold hot streak for the opposition isn't going to carry on very long, and the kind of cold streak that we had in the first 30 minutes where we have 11 shots to their zero again isn't going to. Nunes shanks a big chance, and I'm going to ask you, Si, because you mentioned it, Salah's header's not a big chance, is it? It's a lovely pass from Trent, but it's not a big chance.
It's not. And if you look at the map, I think it might be 5 metres closer to the goal than it actually was. But on the map, it looks way closer than it was on the video. Yeah. It was coming over his shoulder. He turned it into a put. So the average across the different, if you take out Understat, who gave it a 50% chance, if you, I think 50, 52?
40.
Was it 40? Okay. I think the average was 0.22 across the four different sites I had a look at, and which seems about right. You guys said it was about a 1 in 5. I think it's even less than that. Consider how many conversations we've had about headers.
Headers, we are. You're right.
Yeah, really low. Yeah,
like that's headers the on the 6-yard box, like that Virgil has against a header on the penalty spot, or maybe even a little bit further out with a ball coming over your shoulder. And he turned it into a 0.46 post shot, which is, you turn it into above a big chance. It's a very good chance of going in.
It was our first on target. Opta had it at 0.15. So you think that's about right, say?
Yeah, I think it's much closer.
Yeah.
I'd agree. But Nunes did shank his big chance, didn't he, on the 8th minute?
It's 0.25, wasn't it? Yeah, 0.25. Is that back post, yeah?
Yeah, but the other models had it at 0.4, and I think if you put the screenshot in of the moment of the shot, he is in the 6-yard box again with a big chance again, but he just doesn't get any connection with it, does it?
No, I mean even the one just before half time where he hits the post, he completely shanks that as well, which I think's not a better chance, but they're both similar positions, aren't they? I think both back posts, and he just. Yeah, he doesn't seem to hit the ball well in the game. The through ball in the start of the second half.
Nerves?
I don't know. I mean, we'll come on to it, but he seemingly wasn't in a... Maybe it was nerves. Overstimulated for the game, I don't know. But maybe the Palace centre-half was in his ear the whole game and that put him off, I don't know. But it does... To miss... Certainly, the one before half time and the first half went in 9 minutes. I would have thought better chance. They were good chances for someone of his quality.
He's missed four big chances in his 110 minutes so far.
Yeah,
scored one.
Scored one. Yeah.
So which he's had five in 112 minutes, but he's missed four out of five. That's not great. But it will correct, I'm sure, as he gets confident and fits in. It must be, I know I talk about humans all the time, footballers, but it must be kind of hard to, it's playing at Anfield in front of a crowd on your first, making your debut at home. It's a big deal.
Yeah, no, I agree.
That take the piss with the rules. So it's a new way of playing football, the level of cheating that goes on in a different way in England, which is as standardised as normal. That's something to get used to. He probably gets to bully defenders quite a lot because he's a big, huge dude. And he's playing against the guy that's 5 inches taller than him. So that's a big thing. He knows he's missing a few. But on top of that, he gets so few touches in the game. So he gets so few opportunities to have a good touch and go, yeah, nice. Get a little bit of confidence. Because his touches are so intermittent. So it must take a little bit longer for guys like that to build confidence. They have to have stuff go their way. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I agree with you. The human side of it is often overplayed. It's just unfortunate that in the games we've drawn to, isn't it? And he's missed big chances where we could have won comfortably, you know. And that was at 0-0, that image that Rosie's put in. Just needs to bring that. I think he's trying to hit it first time, but just bring it down and slot it near post, and that's an easy one to get going. But yeah, you're probably right. The human element, he wants to. I think you said in the chat, he's gone in with a. I want to be the big player, I won't put exactly what he said, but and
probably big balls.
Yeah. Whereas if he'd just done the simple thing and bring it down and finish it, it's not a big balls finish. It's just a simple finish. And I think maybe that's something he needs to think about. But he will get told that in training, obviously.
I tell you what, I've been banging on about this. We don't have the capacity to have two of those lads.
No, we don't. Diaz is
one of them has to just roll it in the corner.
Yeah, which is what Josh is brilliant at, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's unfortunate that we've got to play. We can't play him now. We'll come on to that for the United game. But yeah, it's one of those.
We mentioned tactically about Trent with the Salah pass. He was like in a number 10 spot SI when he floated that ball into Salah. Is that like
I think that's part of the intent with that. Is that it gets Trent on the ball in half spaces a little bit higher pitch sometimes to make those passes. But it's like swings and roundabouts. If you get him in there, you're in the hot zone. I'm sure their algorithms have decided that it's more valuable to have him making passes there than it is higher up the pitch. But if you weigh that against the eight, now you're getting the eight has to get in the hot zone. I'm not sure we have a lad that does that.
And I think that's the age-old question, isn't it? That's the thing, isn't it? The algorithm might say Trent will give you massive output from a half space there, but as you say, we haven't got an eight yet. It will go into the hot zone and bring you what Trent does, which is, as people tell me from outside Liverpool, he's the best crosser of the ball in the Premier League.
I think now we can get into that hot zone.
Me too.
But in the 10 or the wide?
In both. I think, no, specifically in the 10.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you, which would be great when he starts playing. Well, maybe Trent goes back to being out wide in the hot zone.
Yeah.
I think, honestly believe that we are one of those transformational situations is when we have that triangle with a runner ahead of Trent and Mo starting from with chalk on his boots, facing play, coming in, and he can either play that beautiful full back heel or the inside ball, or he can play off, or he can play into the spot, or he can beat a man. I just think that's transformational for us, rather than him starting high up and playing with his back to goal or running his nuts off and not getting the ball passed to him.
I thought so it was interesting.
Ideally, that's the way, and I would love
eight chances created. Isn't that a record for him?
What, Mo?
Yeah.
He's made 11 before, but that's a lot, yeah.
0.5 expected assists, so not a high quality level of chance, but
he's got 0.99 XG chain, isn't he? Am I reading the right column?
Yeah, there you go.
0.99. Yeah, we had quite a lot in this game. Didn't we have 0.35 non-shot in this game?
Yeah.
3-1 non-shot, yeah, and 5.8.
Yeah, which is great. We had lots of really, really good build-up. We had some really, really good opportunities without creating massive.
No, I mean at Harvey, you give him a shout out.
Which is hard against a packed defence.
Harvey was 1.66 XG chain, 1.14 XG build. It's good.
Right, I'm gonna ask you something. You mentioned after the game that we had two penalty shouts, and I was trying to work out doing the pressing which ones you thought it was. Does Anderson push Nunes in the back at the edge in the corner of the box in the first half? Is that a pen shout?
No. The two shouts are absolutely brilliant bit of play. I think there were 18 passes that ended up with Trent passing into Mo, who slipped in Darwin beautifully with a reverse pass, and then Darwin had a shot, and Anderson Ward just saved it.
Yeah,
it was going in the corner.
Second half.
Second half.
Start of the second half.
Because I think, Roti, the one you're talking about is left side of the box, isn't it? Where Darwin gets pulled over. See it?
It's not. It just looks like he pushes in the back.
But yeah, so I'm saying. You've seen them. I mean, that's one of them. That's really hot. I hate this phrase, but we have seen those given before. He is pushing the back.
Less given. Loving Calvert-Lewin. Yeah.
So, but no, I think the one where the reason I gave on the TV feed I was watching was that he didn't move his arm outside. It's an unnatural position, but I think Sy's point on it is he saved the ball with his hand. Like, it doesn't matter. He saved the goal with his hand. I mean, that's handball.
If it's going at the goal and it hits your arm, it's penalty.
Yeah, so I don't understand why they even spoke about the moving his arm or anything. It is a penalty. Straightforward.
And the other one, obviously, is Diaz getting hauled down, si.
No, wasn't it? Mo getting picked up and dropped.
Was it Mo?
Yeah, it was Mo on...
And about 5 minutes after that, he did a fairly similar, but lesser thing to Diaz. But yeah, so Mo was running through. I think Trent dropped the ball out of the air towards Mo, who ran into the box and faced up Anderson, who he was kind of backing around Anderson. He put both hands on him, dragged him, stopped him from moving, and then literally picked him up and shoved him a meter to his left.
Yeah.
Oh, I had the Diaz one that I've just posted in the thing, the screenshots. It looks like a foul to me. And I thought it was ironic that Diaz then got a foul for exactly the same thing about 10 minutes later.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, it was before that.
Yeah.
So yeah. We had more than two shouts. Anyway, let's come on to the Zaha goal, because there's lots of issues with this one. I did the pressing on it. I genuinely think Fab was sublime in his pressing and also ridiculous at times in terms of committing. Is he not leaving his exposed eye? I know we're going to blame Phillips, but I just think he's leaving. Phillips doesn't know what to do there. He doesn't know whether to play offside or tech him down or track his man. He just looks completely and utterly
If you look at the wide angle before, you can and go 5 seconds before, right? His only there stay side on and in line with Virgil.
Yeah,
that's it.
Carragher so says
Virgil should always be the deeper man.
Carragher said that, and
he dropped 5 yards beyond the halfway line. So Virgil was inside their half. He dropped 5 yards beyond the halfway line. Just before the Fab attempt to tackle, and then he came out towards Zaha because Zaha just ran off the back of, ran around the front of actually of Virgil towards. He was like, "Yes, there's the elephant." Ran straight at the elephant, and
then he also spins outside.
Really hard to turn and run because he's not fast. Problem made exacerbated by the fact that he actually was stepping out at the time. He was running towards to get in line with Virgil, and then he had to turn around, and then he tried to play him offside.
And he turned the wrong way as well.
Yeah, because it wasn't about marking Zaha. It was about getting back in line with Virgil because he knew too deep, so he was trying to get back in line with Virgil. Looked up, saw Zaha as well. Shit. So my thing about Fab is breaking glass. He didn't go there to press. He went there to foul. Easy is brilliant at one-on-ones, and he whipped past him. And Fab did his absolute best to bring him down. And that he wasn't pressing. He was trying to crop him.
It still counts as a press because he is applying pressure with a foul. Yeah, we have got press lead to a free kick.
Right.
I mean, the only thing I'd say from that is Fab. All right, he's got in because he has gone to help his mate out. I think he is totally aware of who's behind him. Phillips probably could have done better by just staying where he was. Like Si said, the fact that he tried to get into line shifted his weight the wrong way, so then he had turned the wrong way to go. If he just stayed and gone, right, I've played him on side, at least I'm level with him. I can go, do you know what I mean? You go with him, he might have had a better opportunity. But because he did that weird turn thing with his weight in the wrong position, he was done. It was done as soon as the ball went through. I also would say that we didn't hold the ball very well in the final third. The ball was punched in, I think it was Darwin. He didn't hold it, and then Palace nicked it, and then they broke, and that's where Fab then has to go and break his leg. But I think there was a couple of errors in there beforehand. We should have held the ball in the final third better for me. It wasn't. We were used to fizzing the ball in up top. We didn't hold it, and it pops off, and then they nick it and go and break. But, you know, it's several things exacerbated, and it's all in that channel where we know there's a massive weakness in our team.
So I would say in that first half, we had 77 presses, 40 we won possession from. Now, that's more than 50%, and that's incredibly high. So I thought, this is what I mean about Fab's sublime pressing, because at times he was winning the ball back, or players were winning the ball back, and we were just kept them pinned in. And I know they weren't trying to come out, but they couldn't get anywhere because we were applying such good pressure with such good energy intensity, which is what we're supposed to be about. But the worrying thing is that none of it led to a shot, and we had two failed presses that led to nearly one XG for Palace. So not only is there the goal, then there's the next chance. Again, it was Fab who misses a press. And Si, you'll talk about Phillips again, I'm sure, with this one. The second big chance.
We can just criticise his shape, his speed, his decision making. He shouldn't be in our team. That's all. And I feel bad about talking.
No, we shouldn't. It's not. It's just.
It's like me criticising you for not being able to play.
I'll tell you what, spin it the other way. Palace did really well to exploit a weakness in our side. It's a simple way to exploit it. Let's just spin it that way. Positive. Vieira, as Si said, looked at the team sheet, right, this is what we're going to do, and it worked. We and on 27 minutes, there was an...
We don't need to be a managerial genius. Yeah, all three of us would have done exactly the same thing.
I'm just trying to not dig out one of our players too much, you know.
You'll get on Phillips. That's what you do. You're not gonna pull off on Van Dijk, are you? Because you're just gonna take the ball off you, or read it properly.
And just as I said to one of my girls on Sunday, go and face up your opposite number, because I could run past them in my flip flops.
There was a warning sign before that goal, though, on 27, where the same sort of thing happened. Phillips stays with him, wins the ball, and then just puts a simple pass out of play. And then you just see Zaha going, yeah, all right, I've kind of got your number. But it was, yeah, you could see it. That was what they were trying to do. But yeah, it doesn't take a tactical genius, but they still pulled it off.
But it also, when he kicks the ball out, when he loses the ball, it takes another minute out of the game, because they're cheating from the first fucking minute. We excitedly got in their box. I was driving at the time. I missed it. I've seen the highlight. Milner had a good chance early on, first minute.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they scored 2 minutes and 36 seconds out of the game after the 55th minute. 55th second. They then took 2 minutes and 26 seconds out of the game whilst their goalie was fake injured.
Yeah.
The other thing we also
2 minutes out of the game after the goal because someone was lying down being injured.
Yeah, cramped, didn't he? Or apparently on like 20, 30 odd minutes. But the other thing about the goal is Zaha's finish is exceptional.
Oh,
yeah.
It's like VVD has literally done the same move. He's gone in and gone, go on then. I know Ali's covered 98% of the goal. There's a little pinprick where you can put the ball. If you put it there, BVD's gone fair play. And he did. He bends it round Alisson's hand, pings it off the only part of the post that will make it go in the net, and it went in. It's an exceptional finish. I know it's a shit way in which it came about, but the finish is sublime.
What are your thoughts on VVD got some criticism from Cara, but from a lot of fans jumped on it because he looked like he slowed down, right? I think this thing started last season. We highlighted it in UP early on, right? Whereby if there's a clear shot at goal from distance, we don't get in the way. So we give Ali the best view possible and the least chance of getting away. And a couple of times in the season, both off Matip, there was a deflection from when he went to the ball and it spun in. And I think we go, right, we narrow them to it and then allow them to shoot against Ali.
Yeah, I 100% agree that that's what BVD was doing. And Carragher said that as well.
It happened with the offside chance as well.
Yeah, but I mean, Carragher even says it, and then he goes back and has a go at BVD for not closing, or was it Neville?
Because he doesn't have a go at his mate.
But no, I completely agree with you. I think the two chances where Matip actually doesn't do that is against City, isn't it, with KDB's deflected shots.
Where Ali
would have saved both those from distance, I would have thought.
Yeah.
So I think
you can get that. If you slide in to make a block, the ball can just nick off an ankle or a shin and go into a place that makes it impossible for a keeper to save. And from that angle, I wonder what the odds are of Zaha taking 100 shots from that angle against Ali.
And scoring.
Ali wins. Ali saves that. I think Ali saves it over 90 times.
I was going to say 9 out of 10. I didn't do a Palace shot profile, apologies. But it seems quite wide, isn't it? It's not central.
No, and Zaha's a 9% career
finisher. Yeah. So he's basically hit his one wonder strike, wonder shot, if you like, finish in the only chance he has.
Of which, ironically, our street baller also did.
Yeah.
But that's a different finish, though, isn't it? But yeah, I know what you mean. But yeah, to answer your question, BVD did exactly what the plan was. I think maybe Matip potentially doesn't have the confidence to do that as much. I don't know. But
from an analytical point of view, boys, this seems completely counterintuitive to what you would think, wouldn't it? Leaving Cooper one-on-one with a player to let him shoot.
But Alisson's that good.
I agree, but doesn't
and he's it, also he's not leaving it completely open. He's not leaving him completely open. He's not allowing him to come across.
Leaving any open, is it?
He's basically saying you've got a tight and that so it's not like he's saying you have a shot, but I've limited everything down so you can only shoot in this area. And I think that's a difference between saying go and then have a shot from anywhere. He's controlling nearly, I would say. I mean, if we're saying Ali saves it 9 out of 10, and then BVD has gone to control 90% of that opportunity, so there is only 10% of that goal to aim at. And I think that's different from saying, go and then have a shot. It's all part of our defensive high line. But it takes an elite defender to do it.
Can I point out, at that point of the game, they'd had 2 touches in the final third. We'd had 31 touches in their box and 9 shots inside their box. That they skanked us again for the 6th game in a row. That's got to be that makes you puke. And we hadn't talked about it at all. But if we had Analytics Stadia, it was remarkably quiet for the opening game of the at night.
Yeah, it was.
It was like Watford at home at 3 on a Saturday in December.
But the people that were there were saying the atmosphere was really good. I'm not sure about that.
After Nunes got sent off.
I guess.
Yeah.
Right, come on. Let's go on to that because it was a key moment. Anderson had been winding him up all game. Phil, what is he doing?
It starts in the first half. You know that thing you and me were saying, was that a penalty or not? That's Anderson on Nunes. And then he has a pop in the first half. He clearly doesn't. He's hot and bothered. He's probably, as Si said, he's annoyed about missing the 2 in the first half. He's come out second half. He then the through ball from, I think it's Mo, isn't it, in the first 5 minutes. Personally, I think Nunes should probably at least get a better shot off. He doesn't. So at this point, I can only imagine he's extremely frustrated by not having scored by this time, because in his head he's had 3, and I don't know what he's doing. Clearly the Palace guy is in his head, in his ear, having a go at him. But to react in that way I saw the summary on Sky Sports, the referees literally stood there looking at him from the first header, second header, and then the final one where he does send him off for. So it's, I don't know, he's clearly just completely oblivious to what's going on, and he's so infuriated with the defender, he's just gone and headbutted him. And
I heard quite a few Liverpool fans, I'm not sure to say quite a few, but some Liverpool fans were saying, did we not know that he was hot-headed? And I was like, well,
there's no record of it. He's never been sent off before.
And isn't this crucial? He would have had much more protection in other leagues, wasn't he?
Yeah. Particularly, exactly that. You get touched in other leagues, it's a foul. We're not only, it seems that we're currently a little bit victim. It happens very often. Each season, referees are started with a new precedent. They're gonna emphasize this one thing or another. We end up being the victim of it, and they change the rule mid-season. This sending off's not that occasion
all the fouls that have been allowed. What is that change of rule or perception?
It's supposedly they're supposed to be more emphasis on the force of the contact rather than contact. So players can't just throw themselves to the floor anymore and get a free kick. They have to be seen to be physically imposed upon, impeded. In my brain, it's just allowing even more subjectivity to the dumbest motherfuckers on earth.
I was going to say, it sounds very subjective, the use there.
Makes it even more. If you consider...
Is it trying to equalise it between the groks and the skillful?
But no, I, at this point, I'm not watching enough game, enough football, but it seems to be slightly amplifying the advantage it gives to the shitty teams. But I feel like we always get to play against shitty teams that are allowed to foul us. So I'm not sure how much it's been amplified, to be fair. But shitty teams are always allowed to foul big teams, the good footballing sides. It's absurd, but it's part of the narrative of Premier League that, you know, the shitty teams can cause an upset and they do it by fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you make of it, sorry?
I've watched back the previous 5 minutes to see if you could, because the Sky kept going over and over on it and talking about altitude and the red mist descending and blah, blah, blah. And I went back 5 minutes, then 8 minutes, then 12 minutes, just watching him, nothing else, to see if there were like niggly fouls, if Anderson had stood on his foot or, just left one in on him or pinched him or grabbed his shirt or grabbed his hair or something. Honestly, I didn't see anything. I didn't see any justification. The only frustration I could see is that he was giving the ball away with half of the touches he had. He was having a shit game. I wonder if the frustration was entirely with him and he didn't like being same manhandle. I don't even.
It's a different manhandling, though, isn't it?
It was a bit of a push, and he leaned back into Darwin, leaned into him to kind of just shove him off with his head, and then Anderson came out and shoved him in the shoulder again. What? And he's a big lad, and Darwin was like, it wasn't a headbutt. He was puffing his chest at him. He was trying to give him a chest barge, but literally just because of the logistics involved of Anderson's height. If they were the same size, it would have been chest on chest. But because Anderson's so much bigger, it was chest and then head on chin, just below his chin.
Yeah.
So it looked like some kind of weak ass headbutt. He absolutely, unequivocally deserved sending off for being a petulant little twat. But it will never not piss me off that Anderson went down like somebody had given him a haymaker in the jaw.
Yeah, for sure. I think you might be right on his performance. He's generally, 55% receiving success. His passing final third was 67% low, the lowest out of our front players.
He had 49% ball retention.
Yeah, he was not having a great game. Pass completion of 67% overall. I mean, that's just, it's bearing in mind the next lowest is 77, which is Diaz.
He had 19 touches. Just not very much either.
No, so every time he got a ball, he was trying to do something, wasn't he? Because he was like, I've done something bad. I need to make up for it. So, yeah.
I'm not bothered about his volume of touches if you're having as many big chances as he's having in good quality.
No. I agree with you, but I'm talking entirely from a person's perspective.
Yeah, I agree.
If you're missing those big chances and you don't get another touch, touch to that, he had three previous touches in the previous minutes. One of them was an absurd, terrible first touch that bounced. It was like Heskey. It bounced 20 metres away, straight to their player who got to break. One was a beautiful little pullback from the hot zone that nobody was there for, because our system is designed to have him there. And I think that was the one preceding. And I think that is the one that got him really frustrated, because he's putting all this work in and nothing's coming off at all.
He had the through ball as well, didn't he, just before that as well, from Mo.
Yeah, that was the third touch before that. Nothing's coming off, so he got a foul penalty. Yeah. He should have had a penalty that he didn't get given. And then, but either way, there is nothing that happened before that could justify his petulant response. But I think he was a little bit unlucky in just how, just the size of Anderson it looked, but when it wasn't.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
Yeah.
Can I just point out also, I hate all of the goddamn cheating. Pitch. I was equally apoplectic when Tsimikas threw himself to the ground, rolling down, holding his face. When I'm not quite sure which
Edward
one
elbowed him. Yeah,
Edward. Yeah, he did because it was kind of throat. If you'd have gone down holding your throat, which was perfectly justifiable, I get it. It looked like he'd been someone had twatted him in the eye socket. Cool. It's yeah, just not cool.
I don't mind.
Stop
it.
Shooting.
I don't mind any of this. Let's come on to. Another point that people are making now, Phil, is that everyone's going to target Nunes now. Everyone's going to just try and wind him up. But Si seems to be suggesting that that narrative is a little bit off because there wasn't that much of it preceding the event. So, will he learn?
Of course, I think it's a lesson, isn't it? That's a really old saying, but I think Si's right. If you look at his stats, I posted in there the forward stats and his shot map, he wasn't having a good game. He's missed two massive big chances before half-time, which would have put us 2-1 up. He's in, as Si said, he's had three horrible chances, including missing a through ball from Mo just before that incident. He's just not having a good game. And I think you'll learn from that. I think the players will get around him. And he has to get used to the fact that there are crocs in our league, using Si's words, that are going to try and do that to you. And he's just got to show them by putting the ball in the back of the net. If he puts the ball in the back of the net, I'm not going to touch him. And it's that, for me, it's that simple. If he, as soon as he gets on a run, gets playing, gets confidence, scores some goals when he should score, then I think this will all dissipate into what was that on about? What was that all about from early season? I think he just needs. He's going to miss three games now, but that gives him time to stay away, training, get used to our system again, work on the training ground, which is we've got quality time to do that. I just think this won't be, I don't think this will be an issue. I think it's more about once he improves his performance, it will just go away. It won't be there.
I honestly think Under Pressure should have a separate dictionary for some of Si's phrases and words that he uses.
A little glossary.
And gloss.
A glossary of terms. There you go.
A glossary for Si. Si, what did you make of equaliser 5 minutes after the sending off? Because this was a beauty, wasn't it? This is called finishing. The finishing fairy, just doing mad shit.
I called it not during this game, but this is the thing I accused Diaz of being. It's absolutely glorious when it happens, and hat tip to the awful Nat Phillips who launched a through ball that went right over everybody. But the Suarez in Diaz, or what do they call him? Luchito. They were calling him Luchito.
Yeah.
Klopp called it him, and whoever Milner, which is the most absurd thing ever in the world, hearing. He chased down the ridiculous through ball and kept it in and laid it back to Milner, who gave it him back, and he beat 17 fellas, chopped inside and lashed it, not even quite into the corner. But it was one of those beautiful, delicious, goal of the season kind of goals. I think Diaz, I said last week, I think he's going to get, he'll get 10 of those in a season. And I want to see him score tap-ins, please. And he missed one of those early in the game.
As Short Matt says, is where there's two around the penalty box, so he misses. But he scores the one from miles out.
While he is practicing getting into better positions and better finishing with that, if he can do this once every three or four games, sign me up.
Happy days.
Is this the baller thing you were talking about?
This is a street baller move. This is what the glory boy does, because he was kind of shit until Darwin got sent off. He was way too infield, and he kept doing lovely little tricks straight at four people. And he wasn't interchanging in play very well. He wasn't retaining possession in the right spots. He wasn't causing any threat. And it, like we talked about this last week as well, that he is better, like I was saying with Mo, when he's coming from the touchline, he's facing play and he can run at somebody. So he needs to start wide, which causes them to move to him, and then he can kill them. When he's drifted in field and he starts surrounded by three people and he's not facing them in the first place, occasionally he'll do some glorious little skill that looks nice and will beat the first guy, but he's got two guys straight there and he doesn't do anything in possession, or he has to give it back 20 yards. And we look fried. But when he's wide, he gets isolated, and that only happened, thankfully, because of Nat Phillips' terrible pass that drove him that far out wide. So the goal happened because Nat Phillips' shit pass.
Do you think, Si, maybe this, you know, we talked about the fullback evolution for us. Maybe that by Robertson not doing that, he's forcing Diaz inside because Robbo is being wide.
I think he's playing inside because that's where Mané used to play. I think it's how our system works.
Okay. I just thought maybe he's trying not to be in space.
I think it's wrong for him.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I know better than Jurgen Klopp. I'm just saying that in this case, he's wrong.
Yeah, you want Diaz 1v1. That's what you want. And you want him out
wide. Or 1v2. I just don't want him receiving the ball slowly, 1v4.
No. You want him to stand up, head up, face the player up, and do his thing against the...
Because when you're inside, you are much more part of the system. Your timing and decision-making has to be fast, deliberate, and everybody around needs to know and know what to expect.
Yeah.
And if you're wide, you can be a street baller and a killer. And I don't think he's ready to be the sophisticated, nuanced part of the mesh, the brilliant like hive mentality that we forged yet.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, we're getting on to 1 hour and 10 minutes now, guys. But I would say, Phil, what did you make of the substitutions? Because you mentioned earlier about Gomez coming on and looking Rolls Royce.
I thought he was...
I thought Henderson played well as well for the time that he was on the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, Henderson played all right. 88% pass completion. Final third wasn't great, but he was mainly sort of sitting next to Fab, wasn't he? I thought it was interesting timing. Was it 67, 78? No, 60, whatever it was. It was just after the hour.
Just after the goal, wasn't it? Just after the goal.
Just after the goal. I thought, you know, in Pep's book, he talks about this plan B system. I don't even remember that, but he goes with a box, and the fullbacks go wide when we're in trouble. So you go with two centre halves, two pivots, two tens, two forwards, and your fullbacks provide the width.
Yeah.
I thought it was trying a version of that because we basically had two centre-halves and two in front. But the tweak to this, what happened last night, was TAA, Trent goes into the 10 position and Harvey pulls out wide. Robbo keeps his wide. Diaz comes into the 10 and Mo rotates from being up front. So it was I thought it was a tactical change, and it was to make best use of the players we had to put pressure. We didn't. I don't think we created. I don't know. I'll put it in the bubble.
No, we didn't. We didn't really create a lot.
We might have got loads of possession, and I think Joe.
We had worldy shots, didn't we?
And I think Joe basically made sure that we could defend with two. And we shut the door, apart from that one ball from the Robbo's area, straight across the box, which was put over the back post from Palace. But other than that, I thought we then shut the door really well, and it allowed us to be more attacking. We just didn't. I think we might have. We would have been tired, but I think we just didn't do a lot with it in that final third, personally. But yeah. No, I thought it was an interesting tactical change. And it would be, as I said, I said in the chat, he hasn't got the option to do what we did last year, which was go 4-2-4, because we didn't have another forward on the bench and we'd lost the player. So it was like, right, what's he going to do? Is his plan B? So it was an interesting tweak for me, definitely.
Yeah, so we probably should have lost it at the end as well. With like, it was the ultimate pantomime narrative, wasn't it? With Anderson off a flick on, should score 94th minute.
I might have run to Anfield and just punch that
flying headbutt, Si.
Oh my god! But like, I just watched the the clip that Ryan put in from YouTube of Anderson and Darwin, and I've completely revised my view. And Anderson was deliberately the whole game. There were pinches.
Yeah,
I'd have fucking punched him in the face myself.
See, fair play to you, because I thought there was a bit of it, but until yeah. It's a
The Darwin was trying to behave like a footballer, use his body and stand up to him, and Anderson was just being allowed to properly shove him over with two extended arms, and he repeatedly did it. And at one point he allowed his studs to go down the back of Darwin's heel, and the ball broke and Darwin slid and won it back, and then he rolled around the floor like a pussy.
But we try and be objective, Si. So if you were Vieira, would you be telling Anderson to do that?
Yeah. But you don't need to do that. You're a professional footballer.
It's also probably Anderson's default to do that with any forward. I don't think he's particularly picked on Nunes. That is his game. His game is to wind up the forward.
And you do what you get away with. The ref allowed him to get away with it.
He's old school. As Si said, if you look at our glossary of terms, croc means use old school tactics against forwards. That's what he did.
Yeah. Yeah, thuggish. I hate it, but the English press would never allow that. Like the media, the ex pros, they love that shit, and they love it when it's coming from the underdog, because we're British, we like underdog. I don't, but I never did. But like British people seem to, and British football people definitely seem to, and if the underdog can beat the quality by physically imposing themselves on it, they love it even more.
So finally, Phil, what about the context of the season start? How are you feeling? Is the title over, like many people are suggesting?
I'll give over. I think we've all sat here predicting we'd get over 90 points. I don't think any of us are going to change that after two games. Does it make the task tricky? Yeah, for sure. Because City have got a 4-point lead. But we've clawed back bigger leads before. We've got to play them twice. City have got to play Conte, who was a problem last season. So, I would expect it. I put down we get 9 out of 9 for the first block of games, and we haven't. We're now going to get maximum 5. So, it's a disappointing from that perspective, but it is a long season. It's 36 games to go. There's plenty of points available. The things that excite me are some of the patterns of play in that first half an hour, with the intricate passing, where you've got Harvey rotating with Mo, you've got Trent involved. There are some really fascinating facets, ways in which we're developing as a side. And if we can get that working synchronously on and off the ball, then I think we could be in a really good position. But as I put in the chat last night, we have to start keeping clean sheets. We can't keep going on. Is that 8 games in a row now we've conceded the first goal?
Six.
Got to stop that. Absolutely. That was a bedrock us winning the league title.
Yeah. Ty, we drew 8 and lost 2 last season. Are you still going for 102 points for this season?
Well, drop 4. That means we've still got 8 to drop to win by 102. I'm not in this. We are so many points behind. We've dropped these points behind this person. If you're only in the battle against yourself, and if realistically we're aiming at 96 points gets us into that's like the world class territory of you have to be world class to beat us to win this league. Like, we've still got 18 points. We've still got 14 more points that we're available to us to do. I think it's not ideal that the first two games are this, but you're going to end up getting shitty. I saw some really positive signs in this game. And there is a bit of an evolution. We do have, this is absurd level of injury at this, any state of the season. We literally, in the worst season in history of injuries, the highest recorded number of games missed in Premier League history, the most players missing in a week was once 10. We have that this week. And we had 9 last week.
Yeah.
So let's just contextualize. We can get over this. They aren't going to all remain injured. We need a couple of key, well, one key lad back, but having Jota back, I think, is going to be, people are going to realise just how good he is and how he actually helps tick in the way that we think. But I think having a lad that sticks a ball in the corner makes a world of difference. Every
getting Lineker back is what you're saying.
Get Lineker back. I think Mo looked really sharp. We missed them. Oh, God. Imagine if that goal had gone in.
The one on 60 minutes. No,
no. More.
8-6.
The shape on that. Brought it down. Yeah. A couple of beautiful touches. And then just faded it. It was like an inch and a half. Beating the goalie. And that would have been like the turning point of the season. I think Darwin sending off could be the turning point in this season. Because the crowd suddenly remembered what it's like to be Liverpool players remembered what the player and Klopp remembered what it's like to create intensity in his team.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's I think you said in the chat, didn't you? I think this could be a real turning point. It's just a shame he didn't quite get it over the line with that. Was it 86 minutes Mario that shot, didn't he? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sweet spot. We should have been a lovely win. But no, I think Costa's looked really rusty. That's negative, but he just thought he had a good chance to put a cross in and just didn't deliver, which is unlike him. But no, I agree with you, Si. I saw some really good signs in there. You just need to move it on and get them right quicker, I would think, personally.
This period might end up being a god. We have to use more players than we typically would at this stage of the season. So conversely, more players are getting experience of playing in this team.
Yeah.
For later in the season. So Simi's getting earlier minutes than before. Carvalho, I'm telling you, he could be a fucking game changer. Could be he's a total baller. He could be a great season addition.
Yeah, sure. And
there's 10 or 15 games. Oh my God.
I like
the spaces he picks up. I like the pockets of space he picks up. Love his movement. He just didn't get that many touches.
His pressing was good as well when he came on. I would say we've had 7 big chances, 5 XG, scored twice, scored 3 times. I think, and we've conceded first goal in 6 in a row. I think there's some aggression due for anyone listening. So up the Reds, as Dan would say, and he'll be back next week for the Man United game.
Bring it on.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows.
Sports Social Podcast Network.